We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Blue Wire.
NBA Most Valuable Player, Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Giannis trailing the lob. Giannis Antetokounmpo.
1 second.
Hey there, welcome to the Eurostep Podcast Network. This is a Eurostep / Win in Six collaboration in the closing minutes of the Bucks beatdown loss at the hands of the Brooklyn Nets in Brooklyn. Currently, the score, they're down about 40. We'll have score updates. Not that it really matters. I think all of our takeaways for this game have pretty much been set in stone by third quarter, somewhere about, maybe earlier. I'm joined by Adam McGee and Jordan Tresky of the Win in Six podcast. A little bit of a ludicrous question to ask given the circumstances, but Adam, Jordan, how's it going?
Do you want to go first, Jordan?
Bucks and six still on the table. Still on the table.
Yeah. The Bucks themselves might be under the table. Could be the problem.
Yes. Yeah.
Maybe eventually end up swept under the rug. But yeah, I'm not great, Ty. I wasn't supposed to be on tonight's podcast.
It was supposed to be an off night for you.
I watched some miserable basketball. And I was like, yeah, I guess that's, if I've watched this, if I've made it this far, might as well go to therapy. And here we are.
I'm glad that we all look at that. This is Bucks podcasting. It's not art. It's not science. It's not media. It's just therapy. That's why we do this at the end of the day. So not to discount real therapy, all that, but for us, we need this right now. We didn't need this performance that the Bucks put on. I think there's so many places you could start. I'm sure this podcast is ultimately going to be about a lot more than game two, because it's just one of those losses and one of those circumstances that makes you evaluate a lot more than a series or a game or anything like that, or a player or a coach. But I do think there's, of course, a lot of conversation about Mike Budenholzer. So I think we should start there. I think that's what people are going to be asking and thinking about the most, although there are a lot of poignant player conversations to be had as well, and I want to get there. But Budenholzer coming off of the masterclass Miami series. I remember, I think it was the game four post-game, or it could have been a preview for this. I don't remember which pod. But basically, I was like, well, it was a great series, but they've had 8 months to look at mostly the same Miami team and think about all those losses and figure out how to do it better. Is it just having the notes ahead of the test, or is it Budenholzer being a whole different animal in the playoffs all of a sudden? And I'm feeling like it was more the former at this point in time. Certainly, I want to make this very clear. I don't think any of us, if I don't think this, I think you guys certainly don't. This is not all on Budenholzer.
No,
for
not
sure.
Close.
For sure. I just want to say that, but
we'll get to that. I think that's one of the big things worth. I don't think this will make anyone feel better. For me, this has always been a part of it. I have not been a Firebolt cheerleader, ringleader. I haven't really been part of it as much as I wasn't with Kidd either, even though I thought Jason Kidd was a terrible coach who needed to be fired. And part of that is, I think, when the discourse goes that way around any sports team, it's searching for an easy fix. And it's really the nice idea. It's the one that as fans you want to hold up. It's just, you know, the Steve Kerr is out there, which was always the thing. And now that enough time has passed that everyone could come around and that look at it another way. But that was initially when Kidd went, even how Bucks fans viewed it. It's this idea that, oh, it's just this one thing. It's just this one thing. This will happen. Everything will be unlocked. It will all be fine. And you look at the Bucks tonight, and there's so much wrong. There's so much wrong. And I say that and will acknowledge they may well be the second best team in the NBA. But even if that's the case, the gap between them and number one is, you know, cavernous. And if you ever want to bridge that, and you're going to have to try because you've got a player who that's where he wants to be, that's where you've got to aim to be. He has his own work to do to help you to get there. Mm-hmm. But that's the kind of spot the Bucks are going to be. And I wish we could sit here and just say, yeah, you know, it's Bud. Bud's up to the same stuff again, which he is. So is Giannis. So is Chris. So have the front office been. I think now that we're looking at, like, we talked about this privately in our group chat. I'm sure everyone would love to be a part of that. But, you know, gotta get a podcast on the Eurostep Podcast Network to get into that one. There's no screenshots will get you in there.
Closest possible thing, though, the Discord, you can get in there.
It is. That is true.
A rating and review. Just keep that in mind. But, Adam, sorry, go on.
No, that's a valid point, Ty. But we talked about this. It's like the bench, the coach could get more of them. Maybe it could be managed better, but the bench looks like every other bench we've seen just flounder for the Bucks. And once again, you're like, oh yeah, this bench that for a while we were like, oh, they've got some depth. No, they haven't. They haven't for the kind of series where it really matters, where they're really tested to the utmost. The roster building doesn't hold up. The coaching doesn't hold up. And the individual performances of players don't hold up. It doesn't mean it's impossible. It doesn't mean the Bucks can never get there. But I do think if this series carries on as it has been, and I don't know if you're listening and you're feeling confident that it won't, congratulations to you. I admire your positive mental outlook on life. I can't be there. I've been a fool. I believe in this team again. Mm. I don't know why. I do know why. They look good. You know what? They look good. It happens every year. They look good, and then it falls apart. But I have been a fool. I need that on the record. Jordan, you've got something.
See, I don't think people are necessarily wrong.
To believe in this team.
Into believing this team,
yeah.
Especially after the Heat. And granted, the Heat and the Nets, not comparable whatsoever. And what we saw from the Bucks this year and having Drew and the impact of all the stuff that they did differently. The thing that the Bucks they chose to want to do it different this year. They tried to learn from their lessons. The problem was the rug got pulled from under them. And the team that we said after we were complaining about the Bucks moving on from Malcolm Brogdon and them re-signing their players and all this stuff is that the sleeping giant in the East was Brooklyn Nets when Kevin Durant got healthy. And he's healthy. He's very healthy. And he's very good.
That clip that is everywhere on my timeline, I'm sure it's everywhere on yours, is one of the most outrageous basketball plays I've seen in many years. Just
the cross up on Giannis.
That is like his end of career highlight reel kind of play. It's not in a big enough moment for that, but just on a skill level, I actually don't think there's another player in the NBA who can do that.
Nope.
It's been a little while since he's looked quite that good. I would rather if he had have, you know, postponed it for a little while longer. We know that this team could go on to be one of the best teams of all time because they have the players to do it. It's there. We all know that. I think there was just enough areas where I believe, though, the Bucks could, you know, have some control over this, make it into a series. And then if they could make it into a series, Jordan, you know, this has been my line all season. test these Nets, I think they can crack. Right now, I still believe that. I don't see the Bucks testing them, though.
No.
So we're never going to get to the point of seeing that. And also, I'm going to sound like a crazy person, but again, Jordan knows this has been something that I've been beating the drum on all season. Part of my optimism on the possibility of the Bucks holding up against the Nets was you've got three of the biggest egos, biggest personalities, the potential for some very weird dynamics with the Brooklyn Nets. They'd hardly played together all season. My attitude was, if they're kind of doing that on the fly in the playoffs, it could all go wrong. Guess what? First possession of game one, that problem might have gotten taken care of. Like, yeah. I'm not naive enough to be like, oh, you know, this series got much harder for the Bucks when James Harden went down. But the way that the Nets have played would not be how they'd be playing if they had James Harden. The ball just wouldn't be moving like that. It wouldn't be possible. You wouldn't be getting role players doing the kind of damage they've been doing as well, which in some ways is they've transformed into the kind of team that hurts the Bucks more. A version not dissimilar to last year's Miami Heat, some ways in terms of offense, yet the two heads of the snake in this case happen to be Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. And that is pretty different to Jimmy
Bruce Brown. Don't bring up Bruce Brown. Yeah. Bruce Brown is Bryn Griffin, Chris Middleton's Jimmy Butler. That makes sense. That analogy makes sense.
To circle back,
Ty, you're gonna have to keep this on the road.
I know. Bud has to go. I don't want to belabor the point. I don't think it's necessary. They took no shots in the restricted area in the first quarter. I mean, I think everyone who covers the Bucks, a lot of disagreements in that community, sure, but like the size, the Bucks size, that's the one thing that clearly worked at least a little bit in game one. I mean, Brooke Lopez shoots 80% from two. Giannis was getting inside a bit. You know, get guys moving inside and you can do some damage at the rim against the Nets. And they don't even attempt a shot. And it's like, you just can't. I mean, they were unorganized the entire game offensively. The amount of isolations was too damn high, to quote a meme that a lot of younger people listening to this episode probably never heard of, which is fine. It's too damn high. It wasn't a convoluted reference. That's what it means. But it was just like they were completely unorganized all along. And again, I think like the Bucks' defense wasn't very good. And, you know, KD was doing KD things for sure, to be honest. But Brooklyn hangs 125, which is a lot. And I know there was a lot of garbage time in this game too, but this is a team that can and will put up 130, 140. And the whole thing is you have to score to beat the Nets. Like, you can play great defense and it won't matter to this team. And the Bucks put up 86 points. And again, there's a lot of garbage time, but they weren't on track for much more.
When's the last time the Bucks put up 86? Just a better view. Can I even remember off top?
No.
Like, that's a very low
number.
I'll look it up as you keep going, but I feel like it's been a while.
Yeah. It's very bad. It's a very bad number to score against any team, but especially the Brooklyn. I mean, I imagine Brooklyn has not scored less than 86 all season. And if they did, it's probably when like five guys were healthy. But it's just, you know, that can't happen. There's a lot of conversations about how Giannis should be used. I think that are going to be very pressing and probably determine the Bucks' long-term future. I tweeted at one point, you know, there is a Giannis conversation to be had. 18 points on 15 shots clearly isn't enough. Doesn't matter how bad the scheme is against a very bad 23rd in defensive rating Nets team. Giannis can't have 18 points. It just can't happen. I mean, it's very clear that that's not good enough. I tweet he's got to be more Shaq and less KD. And I think that's a tough reality. It's hard to tell the guy who came over from Greece via Nigeria and built himself into a two-time MVP that he should play less with the ball, but the Bucks would be better if he did. Although they might not have the ball handlers to beat this Nets team anyway, they'd still be better than him running into set defenses and taking threes from the top of the key and taking all these fadeaways, a shot that, you know, we see this slight improvement on every year, but not at high enough volume to trust, clearly. And 2-for-7 from free throw speaks for itself. So there is a Giannis conversation for sure, but at the same time, it's like, if the players aren't going to play well and they're not going to be put in good spots, that's how you lose by, 39? It was 40 at one point. It was 30 with starters in the third quarter. I don't think it got to 30 by halftime, but it felt like it. So my biggest takeaway is, yeah, Bud has to go. Yeah, there has to be some roster moves. I think, yeah, you look at the front office, and we joked before the pod, that picture of Masai with, was it Wes Edens? Suddenly it went from like a fun, maybe a little icing on the cake of a great season to like, please God, let this be something and not just a random conversation.
This is Wolverine meme. Someone Photoshop it so I don't have to.
Yeah, make that happen.
It's Wolverine in the frame. He's looking at Wes Edens and Masai Ujiri.
But this is an organizational failure. That's what it is. That's the term that's been in my head the whole second. I didn't watch the whole second half, but it was bouncing around in my head while the second half was playing. We were podcasting. Oh, I saw what I needed to see. It's over now. They lost. In case anyone was wondering who wasn't sure about the result of the game by now. But it's organizational. It's top to bottom. I mean, there's so many things that have gone wrong that I get why people who are more fixated on one thing than the other kind of lash out. You know, the people who say, and I'm saying say, not believe, because these are all true. People who say Chris wasn't good enough are saying, stop talking about Bud. Chris wasn't good enough. Stop talking about Chris. Bud wasn't good enough. Giannis, blah, 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 the bench. You're all right. And the things need to be talked about. Yeah, that's the issue. It's like, don't tell anyone to shut up if they're identifying another thing. Like, these all need to be addressed if we want the Bucks to be where the Nets are right now on their way, presumably to at least playing for a championship.
I have the answer. The last time the Bucks scored 86 or under in a game. Didn't happen this season. Didn't happen last season, regular season or playoffs. It was the 9th of February 2019 against the Orlando Magic, which is a game I have the misfortune of remembering. They lost 103-83 to the Magic, which was one of the worst games of a 60-win season by a long way. The worst we could
Did
probably
Giannis
go and say.
Hurts.
I don't know, Jordan. Giannis did not play. Which
there you go.
That goes a long way to explaining it, I suppose. And if that would mean if I had to dig into the last time Giannis was in the court and they scored only 86 points, they'd be going back even further.
It was before he was an MVP, so before the Budenholzer era, probably.
Kidd was probably, or Prunty was probably the coach.
Yeah.
You're right on organizational failure because, God, there's so much stuff that we could wade back into here and bring up. Like, it's just asset mismanagement.
Do your favorite one. Do it. I know you want to.
I don't even know which one is my favorite one.
Guy playing for Denver right now.
Oh, no, that's just the current one. That's,
fair. For your
that's
favorite
the hot
current
issue.
One.
Well, that would help. I think Austin Rivers would help. The Bucks are just desperately lacking ball
handlers. I'll go one further. Miles Powell. Come on. You go two paint over Miles Powell.
Mike James was available.
I forgot how weird that was, too. Why did the Bucks just not do any kind of signing in a normal way anymore?
I've got a deep cut. Jordan, I think you'll appreciate this. EJ Montgomery, who declared himself a Bucks two-way player and then just wasn't.
Was not, but yet invited to training camp and then
signed. Was that last summer?
No, that was yes.
It was before the season, right?
Yes.
I don't remember that. So I assume it was in my sabbatical.
Sabbatical.
Potential future herd player, EJ Montgomery, but
might need another sabbatical soon. but yeah, you look at everything and it's individually some of the stuff. I just can't believe like we're at the Groundhog Day point. Have you seen these guys dying on every screen? Like going under on Kevin Durant.
Bobby Portis dropped Kyrie against Irving. A KD pick and roll. It's got to be the Bud magnum opus.
Oh, Bobby Portis, guys. I mean, he's not alone. It's everyone. But Bobby Portis, I wasn't on the last game.
Let's just say his name is fitting after what we've seen so far this season.
Bobby
series.
Portis. Yeah.
Portis.
That block that Nick Claxton had on him in game one, where it's like, Bobby Portis looked like he was 37 years old all of a sudden. It's like you can't break away. You can't get up off 2 feet.
Eviscerated.
Just eviscerated. Nick Claxton has been good. I remember that's something we talked about on our pre-series episode, Jordan. Unfortunately, we were like, hey, if this guy, you know, if he goes and has a series, the Nets are just going to be like, oh, I guess we've got a starter for years to come. I think they've got a starter for years to come. I think he's just going to eviscerate guys forever with the rest of those players around them. But the stuff that really, I mean, my biggest concern is Chris because, I mean, all the talk is the offense and his offense has been terrible mostly bar, you know, getting hot when the game was out of hand. The defense It's the worst I've ever seen him defend. He looks absolutely cooked. He's so slow. He guarded KD really well over the past couple of seasons.
This point,
and he's just like just blown by every time. He can't keep up with Durant's brain, first and foremost.
Yeah.
And then he can't keep up with his feet. He can't keep up with Durant's handle, which has been, I mean, I would have put Durant maybe as the third best handle on this team. Not that any knock.
At third at best. I mean, when Harden and Kyrie are there.
But that hasn't been the case. Like in the playoffs, you're like, oh, maybe Durant is just as good as these guys if he wants to be, if he needs to be. He's been at a completely different level. I know him and Kyrie's numbers in game one weren't at the level they could be, but I feel like their play was right there. And they were both just playing the way the team needed to, playing the right way.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Blake Griffin, I didn't watch game one on Twitter. And the next morning when I turned my phone on, I logged on. I saw multiple articles about like this Blake Griffin game. And I was kind of like, really? This is how people saw it? The Blake Griffin game? You live with that. And then it sort of happens again. And I was like, okay, well, this is a problem. And when you're not getting much of anything off him defensively. Look how Giannis has destroyed him for years. And it's like he's hitting a wall when he goes into Blake Griffin.
It's just one player.
And it's not someone that we would have anticipated doing that. I'm just saying all sorts of things. I'll pass it over to you because I don't have specifics for this game because just so much went wrong. Like Pat Connaughton, for example, maybe his worst few minutes, and there's been, some competition there. But
I don't know, the Heat series is not good either.
This is as rough as it's been. You just look at the bench and you're like, oh, I guess Bryn Forbes did some stuff today. At least
Forbes was solid. I mean, defense is what it is. He's minus 22, but 10
lucky for him, he'll like probably be on the Nets next year.
Yeah. No, like I think I wrote about this. For my game preview earlier today, and I finished it out saying game two is gonna tell us a lot about what this Bucks team is capable of doing. And it's like, I finished writing that, I was like, oh, it would suck if they just got blown out. And it's like, I'm watching that game, it was like, you just tempted the devil, didn't you? That's what's so, I think what's so, what puts the final nail on the coffin, the Budenholzer coffin, is just the lack of resolve.
Number one thing for me.
It's like, because we can go to the Heat series last year, we can go to the Raptors collapse, we can go back to Atlanta. Like, it's the nature of this. It's not a narrative. It's a distinct, this is just what happens with
it. Is your greatest concern with that, though, not that it also predates, but...
Yes,
it comes down to the core of the most important players on this roster. And it's a conversation that we've had in many different guys, as all three of us, over many years. Like, I could probably think back to 2015-16, when there were plenty of sky-high expectations for how the Bucks were going to kick on. And my God, did they fall flat in their face. But at that point, it was like, well... Is part of the problem here that, like, is Giannis a leader? Is Chris a leader? Have, like, what way does this shake out mentality wise? Who takes the lead? And is it the right way to get everyone? And we've had so many weird different iterations of veterans coming in and having their say. And sadly, something that a week ago I thought this is great, which is, you know, that they're all dogs. You now just add PJ Tucker to Uncle Juice.
Yep.
And Jet.
He's going to Barcelona along with Nikola Mirotic next summer.
Let's say along with Powell, a respectable veteran. let's not sully the man's name like that. As much as his defense, we expected more. Certainly.
He looks like he's doing the Cupid shuffle out there.
He's just old. We knew he was old, and that's part of why, you know, he had a lot of the year off. Like, and it looks like it. He's not the guy he was 3 years ago, 4 years ago, because guess what? He was old then.
Yeah.
And he was kind of hanging on. It's like, you just look at all of it and all of these little things that might have been hanging by a thread, but you know, made the whole thing home along against the Heat. Those treads are loose now. Maybe the Bucks win game 3 and 4. Maybe.
So I want to speak, because I think it's glaring, the lack of resolve, mental toughness, whatever term you want to use. It's out there. I mean, this series, I think both games, but especially this game, after like the first few minutes, like, Brooklyn was just having a great time. I mean, every role player feels great. They are not encountering any real resistance. The Bucks are not having any sort of momentum after, like, I don't know, the score was like 7-10 or something at very early on. And I kept thinking, like, wow, this does not seem good for the Bucks. I'm surprised the score is this close. And then it wasn't for the whole rest of the game. Yeah. But it's just like, it's one of those things that a lot of people, especially those who are very fond of analytics, will laugh at and say, like, it's not real or whatever. But if you watch the game, like, it's very, like, it's palpable. You can feel it. Like, the Bucks were disengaged in this game pretty early on, and the Nets were the exact opposite. They were like, I mean, they were having fun doing it, but they were relentless. I mean, every single player was stepping into jumpers like they knew it was another nail in the coffin, to borrow your analogy, Jordan. And they hammered it shut. There's like a billion nails in the coffin right now. So I think whatever it is, I think I don't disagree that it's more than just Bud again. It's not like you don't get another coach and suddenly everyone is you know, a rock hard badass. I do think you could make some progress in that direction. Kind of expanding on what they did. Because I think PJ and Drew and sort of Portis, although he's been too bad to contribute in this sense this series, were moves in the right direction. I think a guy who hasn't played enough probably named Thanasis is farther of a move in that direction. I think he's the one guy night in, night out all season who brought.
They just need a chainsaw. Just throw a chainsaw in the middle of the series.
That's what he is.
Maybe Thanasis injures six guys. Maybe he injures so many guys the Nets don't have enough players to play.
And the Bucks win by default.
Yeah, exactly.
they basically cannot field a team. No, when I think to be
sorry,
to your
when's
point,
the last time? Just one question on what Holly said and on this general point. When's the last time that either of you can remember the books really fighting through adversity and showing some kind of steel in the playoffs?
They never have. They've never won a series that they didn't win four straight games.
I can remember one instance. They didn't even win the game, but I can remember one instance where it happened. And what I'm getting to here is it's time to bring back Prunty.
Wait, what?
I assumed you meant the Budenholzer box. I thought you meant
what's your example, Jordan?
I would say game six of first Raptors series, 2017, first round.
Oh, yeah, sure. I'm thinking of like when they've
but that was also contenders. The team that they went against too was also the Bucks before them. You know what I mean? Like that's how
That is the real example, to be fair. That is the one time, and that rally, I can't remember how they were down like 30 in that game.
Oh, yeah.
And it's one of those moments again where it's like, oh, you know, you got to believe in this team now. Got to believe from next year going forward. There's just never that. It's like, and that's the thing here too. And we've seen some success and we've seen real progress. We've seen MVP awards, multiple. We've seen Coach of the Year. We've seen All-Stars. And yet these series aren't just like the seasons aren't. The books could have lost to the Nets and we could have felt pretty good about it, particularly considering how the Heat series went. There was a path to losing in the second round, feeling like progress was being made. And, you know, you could follow this same track and possibly win it all next year. But instead, we're now shaping up to be left with a sourer taste than ever before. And that is just the problem.
And to go back to Ty's point about, you know, the Nets are walking into shots, you know, tearing the Bucks apart. I believe Giannis said it best after the Heat series. They're playing, you don't play with your food.
Yeah.
That's what they're doing right now.
Bruce Brown hit a shot, a floater over Giannis in the restricted area in, I think, the first quarter. And I was like, it's over. It's cooked. Like, they're not going to, if Giannis isn't going to, can't defend the rim against Bruce Brown, it doesn't. I mean, Joe Harris is penetrating, like getting past Brooke Lopez and getting to that. I know he's improved his game. If Nets fans existed, they
sneaky,
would come for me.
Sneaky good element of his game for many years.
Yes, he can penetrate. He's a better defender.
I wrote an article about that like 4 years ago, Ty. So I've got receipts.
A fine player.
Level exception.
A fine player. Former all-defensive team center, who that is literally his thing, should not be letting Joe Harris just get around him that easily.
For sure.
Everything looks so easy. I want to ask a question, because I think you were tongue-in-cheeking a little bit, Adam, but I want to pose this question to both of you. Do you think the Bucks actually win a game this series? I think they could. I think they might take one of the two home games, but based on what we've seen so far, I don't see it happening. And part of it is just, you know, all the issues we've laid out. I don't think, you know, it's one of those where after game one, it was like Bud needs to play the guys more and attack the rim and everything else. And like those things would help. But clearly, as we're laying out, the issues go so much deeper. That's part of the reason. Also, we still haven't seen the wild variants Nets game. Like I mentioned, they put up 125, which is a lot. But I mean, KD and Kyrie, they shot well from three, actually. They made 8 of 14, but they only made 8 total threes.
Tonight could have been it if it had to be.
It probably could have. But I just think there's going to be a point in this series when they hang 140 on the Bucks. Maybe they never have to because the games are over.
Exactly. Like they could coast for a half tonight. And I think that takes the possibility of that off the table somewhat. I think the Bucks get a game. The Celtics got a game. I think that's kind of a measure of this. Celtics got a game. I think the Bucks could do the same. The Bucks, famous last words here, probably even with a lot of stuff wrong and this matchup not going well, they're going to play well once in 4 to 5 games.
You would hope.
If it's 5 games, well, it'll be too late. But they'll play well once in 4 games, I think. And at this point, it's hard to see them doing much more than that. Like, you never know, you know, it's still at a point, it's crazy, and this is as low as it gets, and I would love nothing more than for people to be laughing at us a week from now, and for us to be laughing at ourselves, because they win game 3, game 4, and we're right back in Brooklyn, and they put in a good performance then, but that is just so far away right now, and I think the most troubling thing is, when we talk about, say, that lack of fight, that lack of urgency, is if you had that, even if you're getting blown out, you know, that's where if you find a spark with bench players and garbage time, I don't mind Diakite coming in there and throwing hands, laying on. If they actually found something and the whole team focused and locked in a way, I don't think that happened though. you know, they don't look like a team that's just going to come out with a big response in game three. Maybe the Nets can get complacent. I think one thing that's for sure is Harden's not coming back anytime soon. They've now earned the luxury of, you know, let's sit him out. We're probably getting through this series without him. We've got a two-game lead. And if we do need to bring him back, you know, let's cross that bridge when it comes to it, because he can have three games off at least probably between now and having to do that. So maybe some complacency slips in for the Nets. Maybe the Bucks find a little bit of something. This is the Bucks. You know what? They probably win game three, lead for most of game four, lose it at the end. And, you know, they lift us right back up only to hurt us all the more. This is how this works. I'm getting used to it at this point. I think a sweep would almost be too swift, too easy.
It's too unboxing.
Right, because we're at the low now. We're at the low at the halfway point. They're not going to let us go out.
When was the last time the Bucks got swept?
80s.
Oh, the Heat series. Winning six series.
Yeah, duh.
The name of our podcast. Of course.
yeah, that did indeed happen. I'd be interested to hear from Jordan. I'm sure he's going to somehow call every possible remaining result as what he expects to happen. I actually think they are going to get swept. And the reason is just because before the series, and we've touched on this already in the pod, but my take was like, this series sucks because they could play their best ball every game and still potentially lose the series, because that's Brooklyn's level of talent. I don't think that's the case with Harden out. The ceiling obviously is a little lower for Brooklyn. I think if the Bucks played their best ball every game, I think they'd have a pretty good shot of winning. But I mean, if they come together for one game and play well, it might not even be enough, which is, that's why I was so infuriated by game one, just because like, you can't afford to look like this ever against the Nets, because you don't know how long your opportunity is going to be until they're just like pummeling you no matter what you do. So, you know, Harden goes out right away and they don't shoot well. They don't get to the line. Neither team got to the line in this game, which is honestly blissful. If it was longer, it would have felt even worse. But I just think the margin is so small anyway against Brooklyn, and the Bucks are so far from playing well. I would be surprised if they won at this point, but Bucks fandom and watching is what it is. So I think you raise a really good point, Adam. It's probably not going to be that simple for us.
There's no logic to it. It's just, you know, the countless broken hearts is really all that comes in there. I mean, the other thing is game one was really bad. Game one just doesn't hold a candle to this. Like, the game one, they could have won, you know, maybe a couple of things go their way. I tweeted this post game one. They lost. Every momentum swing went against them. Every single possible point where they could have got something going, or where they could have kind of struck a blow against the Nets, they were on the losing side of that. And as much as the final scoreline deeply, deeply flattered them in game one, maybe it didn't too, because along the way there were enough moments where they could have just eaten into that and it could have been a real game, albeit one they were never in control of. The problem is we're on a slippery slope, and I just don't know, like, what are you doing? Behind the scenes, what are the conversations? Like, we talk about Bud's lack of adjustment, some of the things Bud goes to, but what is Bud, what are the coaching staff, what are they talking about now, and what are the players feeling about that? Like, what are you doing with Kyrie and Kevin Durant? You've got nothing. Like, that is the sad reality of it. Giannis in this game, just defensively, was a mess. It was one of those frantic games that is like a real throwback for him, where he's out of position frequently. There was that Joe Harris play where he was just asleep. Joe Harris has opened the corner, and then, you know, hard, old-fashioned Giannis close out. And
there was no JR. There was no Jason Terry to distract J.R. Smith on that play. You know what I mean? That was it was.
Yeah, exactly. It was that one. It's just, things aren't good, because the moment for me where I was like, this has gone south, was when I saw Drew on KD at a time when Kyrie was really hot. And I was like, they've gone past the point. Tucker can't take Durant.
Yeah.
Giannis, the foul not quite working. Either. Yeah, that's true. Giannis, it wasn't quite working, but I also didn't get the feeling that Giannis just wanted to own that matchup tonight, like he did with Jimmy Butler a series ago. That's not there in this, then, you know, maybe for good reason, because this is not Jimmy Butler, this is Kevin Durant. And Chris just hasn't got a chance. So if you've got to put Drew on KD, well then Kyrie's just going to kill it. Like they, maybe they need Eric Bledsoe there too. God. That's a joke. They could do with Dante DiVincenzo though.
Yeah. I mean,
it would know, that would help just with the way that's unfolding. But Dante is reflective of, you look at the roster and you look at how this series is playing out and you look at some of the pieces that the Nets are going to and you're like, yeah, what would be useful? If the Bucks had drafted more guys and had more young, mobile, kind of versatile players that were just healthy, available, and playable. And that's the greater concern because we know there's not a slew of those arriving anytime soon either.
Your first pick this draft, come on, bring it on.
You know who would have helped in this game is 2020-21 Sterling Brown would have been a useful guy to have off the bench. He played well and he shot 42%, like a real two guard.
I don't know.
I'm sorry. I can't.
I don't know if he's in any condition to play.
It doesn't make a difference. At the end of the season.
Was he hurt by the end of the year?
He had that incident at that strip club.
Yeah, yes. Right. Yeah. He had that incident. I love that, Jordan. That was
playing for that.
Got to dress it up a little bit.
I digress. The point, like they lost all of them. Everyone that they've drafted is either terrible.
But they whiffed on them.
Better.
That's the point.
Yeah, I mean that's. Yeah. But yeah, exactly. We're not disagreeing.
Sterling had his moments, right? And in theory, that would be perfect. In practice, we learned no, that's not a real thing, and that's the larger point. And we're just going through waves and waves of that. And like, if we're honest, we're really at that same point with Dante. Yeah. But yet, we could still see that Dante is better than not having Dante with the way the roster is constructed right now, which just speaks to bigger issues.
Yeah, and Christian Wood is the guy people will say. There's a lot to that. I mean, just that's the one of the guys that has actually been quite good since he got away. It's whatever. It wouldn't have helped.
Why did the Bucks trade away Dirk Nowitzki? This is what I want to know.
Yeah. I mean, they literally did that. We forgot. Jordan, are the Bucks going to win a game this series? I'm not letting you off the hook. Oh.
No.
Wow.
I think it makes it worse that they have an extra day in between, not just games 2 and 3, but games 3 and 4.
I get a lot of time to think about this.
Yeah, a lot of stewing, and there's not going to be a lot of – and, like, you could flip that on its head and say, like, oh, the Nets are – oh, they're going to cool off with an extra day. It's like, no, they aren't. What are we talking about?
Yeah, that Kevin Durant guy is so much trouble putting the ball in the hoop.
He's a one-game wonder, you know.
Yeah. He's going to totally forget how it goes.
Yeah, has not served the Bucks well already.
No.
You know,
if we wanted to play. That's the other thing. I don't think there's ever been. I can't even remember like the last like. Oh, they're well rested. I mean, they came into the series well rested.
That's my point. But the thing is, we've seen them bad well rested, and we've seen them bad without rest. Yeah. So
they're just too often enough. Just not ready to play in multiple different circumstances after a long rest. I mean, think of how the Miami series started. That game shouldn't have been close, but they just couldn't hit a damn shot to start the series, even though they were taking much better shots than they are in this series. And I'm sure there's people out there, Bucks optimists, bless their hearts, that are going to look at the shooting splits again and go, oh, if we get some positive variance, they're going to be right back in this. And it's like, they're not taking very good shots. I mean, some of them are. I mean,
you can look at the placement of the shots. You don't look at how those shots were generated.
Yeah.
You know,
21 seconds on the clock when they're giving up a 10-0 run.
Oh, my God.
This is another one of those things that there was a time when I was more invested in analytics that I would have argued and said, no, like a semi-open three is always a good shot. But you can never, unless you are Durant or, I mean, not even Curry sometimes – it's just so hard to shoot yourself out of a slump like that. I just think it's impossible. I think you have to get to the rim and open things up, and then that basket looks so much wider. And the Bucks are – this whole series have made it a habit of settling for these terrible, not even that open contested jumpers from players who aren't nearly that level of play. I mean, Forbes actually made a couple, bless his heart. Middleton did after the game was over, as you said, Adam. But, like, you need – especially against this team, but against any team – that's how you 0-for-29 or whatever the hell the Rockets went. Like, that's how that happens, is if over and over and over, you're like, well, the math is right. It's going to go in eventually. Like, sometimes it just doesn't. And you have to go, put it in point blank a couple times, and then it's
PJ Tucker could tell them a thing or two. I remember PJ Tucker being in that game.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what Mike James, I know plus minus, right? Noisy stat, not a be all and end all, but do you know through two games what his total plus minus is?
I can imagine it's super high.
It's plus 42.
Plus 30 in this game. Did either of you see my tweet? I tweeted Mike James would be the Bucks' ex best player tonight. 1, 2, 3, or 4. I think one was winning last time I checked it. That's obviously facetious. But Mike James came to play more than most players on the Bucks roster. He's not been better than them because he was on the couch for so long. He's that kind of player. But I think it's kind of indicative of the whole Nets, not just Mike James, but he has come to play, and he's been a huge – I mean, he has no fear. He's taking everyone on the team off the dribble and opening up shots, and no one on the Bucks has looked like that consistently through two games.
Through two games, do either of you have any Bucks player that you think is playing well or would kind of give credit for their performance?
Thanasis
is probably the easiest. I thought through one game, Lopez, but then –
I think he's close enough. Tonight wasn't great, and you did make a good point with the defense.
Too many jumpers. And yeah, the defense is, again, I didn't think he was awful.
He was also.
I feel like he's trying, though. He's doing something, which is not a high bar, but.
He hit the corner three and that trailing three, and it was like, okay, the floodgates are open.
Yeah.
And I was like, nope. It just draws back down.
It reminds me of game 5 against Miami in the bubble. Like, he was the one guy who was really, really good late in that series. I mean, I was believing in him through almost a lot of this season, despite how bad he looked on defense at times this year, how slower he looked because of that bubble run. It's just like, well, he's going to go out there and do whatever he can, no matter what. Whatever he can may, like tonight, not be nearly enough, but he's one of the few guys where I look at and go like, I don't mind it. You can only ask for so much. I'd like to see him getting closer. I'd like to see him rolling. His pick and roll stats this postseason are phenomenal. He's done it like 9 times, shooting 6 for 8 on those 9.
The problem is the Bucks cannot. I mean, it felt like tonight, too, kind of like fridging the point of rolling with Brooke, Giannis for that matter, and just like creating shots. It was just like anytime the ball touched the paint, Nets hands everywhere. Yep. And turnover, they're running on the break. You know what I mean? Like, it was just like there's the defense was the obvious, like, kind of thing that you look at. But some of the things that you just like look at and you're just like, well, how are you going to guard a 7-footer hitting a fadeaway shot? There's just some things that you just shrug your shoulders at.
Yeah.
Problem is that you're shrugging your shoulders at too many times when that happens. And then you see, like, you know, Bruce Brown and all that stuff. But then the offense is just like, even through the season series, there was just all like, it was just kind of like the ISO run and gun type style that we see from the Nets that the Bucks tried to emulate. And it was almost like, yeah, we were talking about how they played Giannis or how Drew and Chris looked in those games and all that stuff. It's like their offense can hang with them in quote unquote. And now going into the series or where we're at the series and you're just like, it was like, you know, holding back the big jab and then you just get the haymaker, you know, I mean, that's where it just feels like they just can't, I don't know why they veered away from like what we kind of saw, like the more deliberate kind of style of a play that we saw against Miami. Maybe it was just Miami was just that terrible.
They just don't have control. It's panic stations, and that's what playing a really exceptional all-time offensive team does, is because against the Heat, if they had, you know, 4 rough minutes to start the game, you weren't out of the game. Here, if you have 4 rough minutes to start the game and the Nets have anything, you're down 12 points, which is what happened there. And it's like, okay, now we've got no margin for error, and they just freeze up. And I mean, to your point, yeah, there's only so many times that you can be beaten by an incredible, you know, step back shot from the 7-footer. But we all knew that coming in, and we're like, the Bucks can let that happen if they control the rest of the game. It's stuff like Blake Griffin being first on the floor for every loose ball.
Oh my God. Yeah.
The guy has no, his knees are like, they're worse than my knees, and my knees aren't good. And he's getting to everything first.
Bruce Brown, at that point,
you just can't
untouched.
You can't live with them. You're not winning extra possession battles, which again was something that, you know, you destroyed Miami. You destroyed them. And for the Bucks, we know, and coming into this series, we talked about what you got to do with your size, how you've got to kind of win in the margins, but there are areas where those wins in the margins could be really significant. It's not happening. It's the gap is too close. And in some cases, the Nets are actually winning those battles and then doing the thing that we knew all along they would have the edge in.
The Bucks only won the rebounding battle by two in this game. And it's like, that's one of the things, like the Nets were always going to, the Nets were always going to be better in half court. They just were. I mean, they have a bad defense. You can attack it more than the Bucks have, I think. Although, as you mentioned, Jordan, they're not playing like a bad defense in this series. And I think a lot of it comes from the success on the other end. I think it's a lot easier to play that defense, but that's not an excuse for the Bucks. I mean, you can't, they're absolutely letting failures on, I think, defense to start that aren't even always failures. I mean, yeah, KD and Kyrie are going to hit shots in your face. Like that's just life. Happens a couple times. The Bucks get these trigger happy jumpers and then the plot is lost and they're done. But you know, that can't just be an excuse, but the way to counteract Brooklyn being better in half court is like have more tries. It's like the new draft philosophy, right? Like no one's good at drafting. You need more bites at the apple to succeed. That should have been the Bucks' thought on possessions.
The Bucks definitely haven't got that memo.
They don't have a lot of memos tries. At them.
They went the other way.
They're trying to have less tries.
Yeah. Everybody's
You know, you miss on Jabari and you just go, you know what, why even, and Thon and a lot of other guys, you just go, why even try? What's the point? But, you know, that was the way to win. It was like, okay, we're a little worse scoring per possession, but we have a third more possessions and the math works out for us a lot of the times in the long haul. And if the shooting is close, you can win games that way. And, you know, right now they're getting outshot. They're getting out hustled. They're not rebounding. I mean, they had the same amount of defensive rebounds. Milwaukee has 11 offensive boards. Brooklyn has 9. And every single one felt like just backbreaking. I mean, you're probably not going to give up zero offensive rebounds, but like a huge blade.
You can live with KD getting some. He's 7 foot. He's incredibly skilled. It's all those other ones. It's Blake, like all of Brown's rebounds are hustle rebounds.
Yep.
Yeah. Untouched. Blake getting a put back. It's you're not doing enough to get yourself in position to stop him. And just generally, just talking of getting in position, the position you're putting in. Like, how lucky must the Nets feel? You see how the Bucks played against the Heat, and I'm sure they watched film on that and were like, okay, this could be really tough. This is a different team. And all of a sudden, the ball isn't moving anymore. You know, just don't do that. They play ISO ball. Giannis goes back to putting himself in spots where he's basically set up to fail. You know, we could talk about Bud doing that too, and that certainly also applies. But, you know, Giannis has been playing the game for a while now, and he should have a sense of what he's good at, where he's good at, maybe more importantly. And it's not happening. He's finding himself in the positions where he should be, you know, no, you know what? I'm going to call someone over. I'm going to hand this off, and then I'm going to go straight into setting a screen. And instead, it's like, no, okay, everyone's cleared out. I'm going to go ISO against someone and shoot a tree. Why not? Well, there's 5-6 seasons of, you know, the answer to why not.
I hate to reference my own Twitter profile, but maybe Jason Kidd was right about Giannis shooting.
Well.
How about that?
Is this the time where we talk about, so if the Bucks are to have a new head coach next year.
Oh, right? God.
Is it time to try something different? Maybe something that, you know, the whole NBA.
Do this when he's at the head.
You don't know it does anymore. No one really blitzes anymore. Could there be, you know, could there be something there? Could there be something you could pick up? Yeah, in all seriousness on this, because barring some sort of miracle, we are heading towards, obviously, I think a coaching change. And if
you
not,
would hope. You would hope.
An all-time meltdown. And certainly lots of conversation about why it should happen and why maybe it doesn't happen. If they go that way, though, like, let's not make this complicated and a game of who's available, who's not. If you're picking coaches, you can have coaches who are in a job, just kind of ideologically, what you're looking at with this roster, who are the kind of people you're looking for?
Is our answer going to be different or what is, how much does our answer differ from how the Bucks will look at it? That's,
I don't want to think about that. Let me just hear your answer first, and then we can try to unpack that part afterwards.
I'm just trying to.
I mean, I briefly won't lie. I had a raised eyebrow moment. Was it last night? It was last night.
Just
for a moment. No. But that's the road that the Bucks have dallied halfway down before. When I saw he left that job, my reaction was kind of, is there really a non-rebuilding team that's going to do that? And now that you've said that, Jordan, I feel my stomach
dropping. I would like to see him with an actually good team. That's the thing.
That's true. I think he's a good coach. I don't know. When there was half a moment last night where it's like people were going to ask some questions about Rick Carlisle, I was like, yeah, wouldn't that be a fun world to live in? And then Mark Cuban came out and said the thing, which I think is the most important thing anyone ever says about coaches. And I think even the most anti-Bud people should kind of read Mark Cuban's quote. Don't have it to hand, but it's, you know, along the lines of, this isn't the business where you can just fire a coach because it seems like things aren't going well. You've got to really, really know you've got the next best thing coming. The Bucks aren't going to be doing that this summer. They're not going to know they've got a better thing coming, but they're probably going to have to do it anyway. And that is a bad place to be in.
I think they can feel pretty comfortable. There's a better thing coming. Ty Lue was available last summer, by the way.
I don't feel comfortable. I think there's a very good chance that whatever happens this summer, the Bucks are going backwards and may never get to the spot there in the next 2 years again.
That's possible, but I don't think it's necessary.
I will lean 60-40 on it. I'm not saying it's impossible to improve on Bud, to improve the roster around the margins, but...
Actually, I disagree with you entirely because they haven't gone anywhere the last 2 years. They haven't made it out of the second round since 2019. That's very doable in the East.
That's a good point.
That's very doable.
And the other thing, too.
Do we care about making it out of the second round, though? Because
no, but your statement was they won't be as good as they've been the last. They haven't been that good.
Yeah, enough. But I don't even take that as something because there's no difference. Like, they didn't make it out of the second round last year. They may not make it out of the second round this year. Those things are two entirely different. Like, just because they're the second round, I can't treat them as the same thing. Like, I can only view it in how close are they to a championship and are they getting closer or further away? Not in the measure of the structure of the season, but in terms of, as an actual team, when you
watch
where
their roster is,
who the best team is, exactly, how close they are to that. And that's where, are they, you know, they were probably closer last year. It was just a weird season. They did a terrible job when it mattered. I think we all know the closest they were, and maybe their best chance in all of this will have been the first time around. And you're kind of like, oh, it's the first time, there'll be other opportunities. Maybe there isn't. This is just how sports go. And it is really nice to imagine, you know, you can get there and you can get the right coach next time and you can get better. Maybe I've just been too worn down by all of this, though, that I don't have any kind of belief, any kind of conviction thinking that that is the route. I think it's very possible you get someone who on paper could be a great idea. Bud was that. Like, Bud was that, and we saw some gains. The gains aren't going to be as easy for the next guy. Yeah. And the improvements, you know, are very tough to make, particularly with the roster as it is. And with that, I get nervous. It doesn't mean you don't make the move. And I think it may just be at a point where it's like, you know what? Enough is enough on both sides here. I think we can all see there's changes needed to get over the hump. We've got to try something. And that is what this is going to boil down to for me more than it's not Bud, it's this guy. Because I don't think that this guy, like, if you want to say guaranteed, that's a better coach, that could get you there. You're talking... very small number. You're talking on one hand coaches in the NBA that don't have another flaw of their own that we could all be freaking out about and could be costing the books a year from now. And I think it's dicey. Like, I'm fine with that. I understand that's how it is. And it's also the path that could lead to a championship. I'm not entirely sure if everyone is ready for how rough it could be if at this point in their journey, this is a summer of change. And a summer of change potentially on all levels could be a summer of change in the front office will likely and should be a summer change in terms of coaching, and I'd say should be with players, but remains to be seen. I don't know. It's something we'll obviously talk a whole lot more about, but if you still feel that strongly about Ty, I am curious as to just what is the root. I don't expect you to have the right answer. It's impossible. It's the same reason I don't expect the books to have it. But what is the route that you would go where you think, you know, maybe this is it? Like, is it possible they do the Nick Nurse thing and it's like, maybe it's Darvin Ham? Maybe there's enough here, you get someone, but it's a different perspective, a different voice. I don't know. Or are you hoping for a real top-tier, proven marquee coach? Who knows? Maybe you could convince someone, hey, do you want to come coach Giannis?
Oh, I think they'll have their pick of whoever's available. I mean, that's, you look at the jobs available, Portland with Dame already voicing some discontent and even a more flawed roster than the Bucks and a arguably worse superstar. I think they'll be able to choose. My thing, I think I tweeted this today. I have no idea, clearly. People keep sending me names. I don't know. I haven't talked to these people. I haven't studied what. We don't even know anything about a lot of these assistant coaches. Like, we hear a snippet or two a year. That's it.
Maybe get Borkrind.
Oh, God. Not him. I want it to be a real...
He set a tone, right? They yeah. might come with some different energy.
Only if Greg Foster comes with him.
Agreed.
I want a wide-ranging search, and I want them to legitimately bring in, like, five candidates and interview them and get their thoughts. Like, I don't want...
This hasn't gone well for the books before, wide-ranging searches.
What was it, the GM?
Well, yeah, I think that's definitely... I mean, they did it for coaching, too, but...
That's true. Because it was, like...
GM is the one that sticks out in my memory because obviously
they need to be able to actually execute the hire. That's, I mean, that it kind of implied they have to be able to do that. I don't know.
They did better with coaching, as in their process was better. It was less stress-free. Mostly, I think. There's some stuff in the back of my head. I won't say on a podcast. I think it was mostly stress-free.
Yeah, but and I like the hire at the time. I just think it hasn't worked out, and there's been just inexplicable things in all the postseasons. But I have no idea. I think I would lean assistant because I'm just really not that enthused by any of the retreads that are going to be available. I was very high on Ty Lue. I don't think there's going to be anyone like that this time around that is just like proven a legitimately very good coach, which is what you're talking about.
And there is, I mean... I know he comes with a bad rap, and I was not vouching for this last offseason either, but there's no Doc Rivers. You know what I mean? Like, if anything, Bud is going to be the Doc Rivers. That's what it's
going to
be.
No, the Trailblazers are going to be very happy to add Mike Budenholzer and win more games in the regular season than they have in years past. But
they might be better at the playoffs with Bud, too.
It's possible. I mean, the Sixers might be as well. But, that's why I almost go away from these established coaches, though, because I just feel like so often it is you're more likely to get a Doc Rivers than a Ty Lue. So I would lean assistant, but I just want them to talk to five people. And honestly, like in terms of what I actually want to see out of the coach, someone who looks at Giannis as more of a center than a perimeter player, because I think that's how you improve by next year. I think
it's not just a coach.
It's Giannis. Giannis needs to look at himself.
It's like Giannis. It's the whole. The whole front office.
Yep.
It's the whole entire organization. That's the biggest question in terms of what they can control that's facing them moving forward. Because we've seen this the last 3 years. You're not gonna win, you know, with the wall there in the way that it's constructed every time, even when it's Blake Griffin versus three defenders, you know. But to your point of like what you guys are saying, it's like my big question is, so we go from Kidd to Bud, and that was just, you know, the door was open. Everything that was, you know, forbidden. You get to uncover this terrain. You know what I mean? So everything is fair game. There's no more terrain for them to really just kind of find. Where do they go in terms of finding a new voice? What organizational or ideological like philosophy do they turn to? Because before it was like, let's let it fly. Let's play a distinct style defense. We heard that one before, but it worked to success. And it worked to success until it didn't. And now it's like, what does the Bucks roster as constructed, what will they respond to? And that's where, to Adam's point, it's not, that's where it gets way more muddy, because now you're learning, how does Giannis want to play? How does Giannis see his future? How does Chris see his future if it's here? How does Drew see his future? He just signed a big, pretty big contract. You know what I mean?
Like, more important, Jordan, more important. How do the Bucks see all of those things? You know what? Giannis has signed his Supermax, right?
Yes.
He's under contract. We know that doesn't mean a whole lot, but it means something. This is where direction has to come. This is where, if Horse is empowered and Horse is the guy, he's got to be strong. This is, you know, whichever owner is holding the lucky golden ticket at the moment that gets to make the calls, define what the organization is, what the team is, and then you make your calls. You can't go through this of, we're going to fire Bud and we're going to trade Chris and, you know what, we'll bring in X coach and this player will come back in a trade. Maybe we'll sign these two guys in free agency and this is our roster. And then be like, you know, everything is the same. Because that is also the thing, if we take Bud 2 years, which we've now reached a point where we're seeing things we saw before. So it's easy to be like, you know, same old Bud. And it is same old Bud.
Yes.
But it's also not, because we have seen two very different versions of Bud, defensively in particular, but even in some of the offensive ideas, things like minutes have stayed the same. Some of the rotations have stayed the same, maybe in part due to the tools that are there from the front office. But there isn't a great radical idea that, you know, you can keep these pieces in their same slots and completely turn the thing upside down. I wish the Bucks were, you know, six more Giannis minutes a game away from being NBA champions. They are not.
No.
They're just not. They're not anywhere close to it. Would it help? For sure. So that's on Bud. That's not a good thing. But that is not what we're talking about. It's not like, just get a coach in, he'll play him six more minutes. Let's let NBA Twitter, let's let Bucks Twitter coach the team. I wish it was as simple. But Ty said organizational failure, you know, for this game, for this performance, where this seems to be going. I think you nailed it there, Ty. I think it's pretty deep rooted. And we've now leaned so far into that, like, the season is over, that the Bucks are gonna win some games. They're gonna win some games. I can't wait. Bud's gonna have a statue in 6 months. This podcast is gonna exist.
Yeah. You know, it's honestly, I wouldn't have an issue with it existing, because, like, that's what happens when you play a game
for,
like,
sure.
The Bucks played in game two. This is not an illogical response to that.
It's a crisis point.
Yeah, Bucks, I mean, existentialism is back with a vengeance.
But I think it's, like, probably worse than ever, because this is the new and improved team and all these new things. It's like pretty much the exact same result. And just, like, crushing, embarrassing failure and under the brightest lights that I won't say inexplicable, but just now that it's happened, almost feels like it was obviously going to happen the whole time. Even though I agree, Jordan, I think the signs were there. I think believing in the Bucks was perfectly valid, not just because I did. They did look better and they did look different, but I think that shows you there's some deep rooted issues. I think you could get more out of this roster, but organizationally, looking at Giannis the same way, I think there is probably a ceiling. I think there's a lot needs to change, but not that much is going to change before game three. So what do you guys want to see out of the Bucks in game three? Is it just as simple as fight and nothing else matters? Is that it? I don't know.
Oh, I know. Ty, I don't have an answer for that question. I'd like to not be completely miserable.
Yeah.
I don't know if either of you are on that podcast. Right now, that might just be me. So if I'm doing a solo Game 3 podcast,
you're going to be like Robert Redford books? And All Is Lost. You're just out in the sea, just like holding onto a dinghy.
We might open it up. Like, if you guys aren't there, I might just be like, Twitter, who wants to come on?
Just we'll throw you on locker room. You can bring everyone up on stage.
Just you're all welcome.
I think I would like to see two good quarters. I think that's a start. Right. I guess they did have two good quarters in the game one, but I don't know. I have no.
I have an actual answer. I would like to see Giannis play a good game, not in terms of a stat line, but in terms of make some good decisions. And if you lose with, you know, Drew and Chris doing some more ball handling, him getting himself in better spots to attack and attacking from off the ball rather than on the ball and trying to play the Nets in ISO, you know, let's get to playing to his strengths and let's see what that does. That would make me feel good to begin with, because I think if you do that, you'll find yourself in a game. And based on what we've seen through two games, to just be in a game would be nice. You know, the possibility of 2-1 would be a big improvement.
Yeah, I want to see a great game from Giannis, just because you could talk about trading Chris. I don't think many people are. You could talk about trading Drew. You know, I've already seen a couple takes thrown out there. It's very ridiculous. But like, Giannis is the guy that the Bucks need to be able to win a championship with. You're not going to get another guy like this. You're not going to get a guy like this back. If you're one of the four people out there who says the Giannis not mentally tough enough, can't shoot, you got to trade him. You're getting back like a Tobias Harris level player and two Josh Richardson level players and a bunch of draft picks that Bucks are well documented not going to use all that well. So this is the guy.
If your point is true, right? If that is the case, maybe that is the case. Maybe he's not that guy. This is not a new conversation either. It's the long running conversation of, you know, maybe he's like your second option on a true championship team. You've got to get
the
one.
Anthony Davis to your.
Exactly. If you've got to get one megastar. But if that is the case, that's fine. Most teams would kill to have that second guy and have him be good enough that maybe you could lure guy number one. So
you gotta maximize him. You have to maximize
him. Your point is entirely valid, because even if you got a bigger and better player, if that is a thing that people believe is out there and is out there, you're going to need Giannis alongside them to get the thing done. It's the lottery ticket. We all know this. Look, we don't even... Are there really Bucks fans? Probably.
Yes, definitely.
Are we going to call those people Bucks fans? I mean, all disrespect to you if you're listening and you're like, trade Giannis. I mean...
I'm not going to judge how anyone deals with what happened tonight, but my second
thing
is that you will. My second thing is I want to see a good Drew game. I think trading Chris seems like an obvious something that's very much going to be on the table at this point. I mean, the stat line tonight, we all talked about how he saved it in basically garbage time. He was still 7-for-20. Like, that was post saving the game. Like, it was atrocious.
He shot what? 6-for-23 in game one.
Yeah. I remember the talking point was Drew and Chris aren't going to be this bad again. And Drew was not great either. He just didn't shoot enough. I think Drew needs to shoot more. So I want to see Drew and Giannis have a good game. And I want to see them have literally a good two-man game. So I think if Dame isn't coming out of nowhere to save the team or anything else, like, that's probably a pair you're going to need to maximize. So let's start doing that now and get a head start on next year. I'm not saying Chris is for sure traded. There needs to be someone worth getting. I mean, I'm not interested in McCollum.
No, look, I think it's just how things are going. Exactly. You've got to make some phone calls rather than just take some phone calls.
Yes.
That's all it is. If you don't, if there isn't an offer out there, you don't move on from a guy who is very good if you can't get something better. But you've got to be open to some more creative solutions, maybe some solutions that actually get you depth, you know, real depth you can rely on, or solutions that make you younger. You know, you've got to weigh up your options possibly in a different way. He is someone who's going to factor into that. Brooke is someone who will factor into that. I think Drew is, you know, Drew's just here. I think he's almost a perfect fit with Giannis. And he also could be a perfect fit with any other player you were to ever bring in, including like a point guard. He could be the two.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's fine, but I don't know if there's anything else on the roster that you just don't make some calls as well as taking some calls and just see. You don't have to do something, but you have to, you know, explore those options. You really owe it to yourself. You owe it to everyone, because otherwise we're staring down, you know, the definition of insanity.
Yeah. So those to me are the two most permanent fixtures. Plus, of course, Justin Jackson 3-for-3 plus 7 in this game. Those are the three fixtures, so I want to see those guys have good games.
This is a 2014-15 Bucks box score. When you look like no one cracking 20 points,
yeah,
like you just look down the line. If I don't look across at names, like, or we could go back further, I'd be expecting like, oh, I'll look over, that guy might be Jeff Adrian.
Jeff Adrian would have put up more fight and grabbed some rebounds.
Jorge Gutierrez.
Also, it's like 2 zeros and 3 twos point totals for guys who played real rotational minutes in this game. So yeah, very 14-15 Bucks in that there is almost no one you can rely on. You know what I want to see next year? You know what my wish list is? Not a certain player or anything. A two-way guard coming off the bench. They need that so badly. So badly.
So Dante? Sorry.
It's more George Hill, I think, is probably the that kind of player.
Yeah.
Is closer to what you're getting at.
Yeah. Yeah. Even if it's more of a combo guard, an Austin Rivers, I guess, based on the way he's played.
But this is another long-standing Adam and I gripe, not to belabor this point. But it's like, when is the last time the Bucks drafted a true point guard?
Every time. I'm like, just draft a point guard. Just draft a point guard.
Yeah.
Don't draft even a combo guard with ball skills. Like, yeah, a combo guard that their primary skill is ball skills, right? Start there and just, they don't do it. They will never do it. Every time.
I'm like, Brogdon's like the closest thing that they've done.
I feel like there was an accident with that. Yes. Like, they didn't know.
Knowing how that unfolded too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do we have any other thoughts about the Milwaukee Bucks or this game?
Yeah, we've got a whole off season's worth. Yeah. I think is the real answer to that. I don't know if it's gonna be uplifting, but yeah, it will certainly have a lot of, you know,
the content's intriguing. Gonna be here.
Yeah, there's gonna be, there's going to be some fiery content. We don't even have Rohan on tonight. Rohan's going to bring some fire. That's what he can be relied upon for. I don't know. He's having some internet problems. Maybe he'll need some fire. You know, keep warm. I saw some tweets earlier. But look, let's just hope for some life in game three, and we'll take it from there. Sephiroth. Maybe they win one, and the next episode could be a little more optimistic, and they at least... It would just be nice not for this thing to just completely bottom out. It's not going to change what we're talking about today, but there are some, this whole thing can't just be torn down and disappear. There are some parts of this that are going to come back next year, come back the year after that. If we just minimize the scar tissue, it might be too late already, but if we could just minimize exactly what the baggage they'll be carrying with them, that will be great. Or maybe they're just going to continue this run and we're going to have this forever. I don't know how long it would take before they get past the cycle of they lose to a team and then the next year they come back and beat them. Eventually, would they manage to navigate through four rounds of the postseason?
All the good teams in the East, it would take them a really long time to get through the West, though.
I haven't even got to the Sixers yet in any series. So, you know, that's when that day comes, we know they're going to lose the first year to the Sixers and then the next year, maybe. What if the Hawks are good now? That's another. See, so it could be some time.
We have to just hope that whoever wins the West this year is just a mainstay winning the West for like the next 5 years. So the Bucks only have to make it to the finals twice to get the ring.
And looking at the West, that is absolutely not going to be the case. It's everything not. Is coming up books. 50 years since the championship.
Here's to 50 more.
Yeah, exactly.
Jordan, final thoughts.
They can't play worse.
That sounds like a challenge.
Can they? Are we sure?
That sounds. I think that's where I'm at. That sounds like a. They've shot under 30% from three, I think, in two straight games. It does seem unlikely that at least happens again. Although it doesn't feel that unlikely. Wow, we're here. This is. When's the last time the Bucks fans have been down this bad? Because I think the bubble, I don't know if it ever got like this, really. Maybe it did.
I think the bubble got like this. It probably did. The bubble was bad.
I agree, but bad. I think it was easier to call it a fluke, like the Bucks organization did.
Sure, but Giannis hadn't put pen to paper at that point, so the stakes were higher. It's easy to forget.
Yeah, things that could element be... changes it.
Yeah, there's no Supermax extension. Like
Dante?
yeah, there's no concerns. Even like, you know, I'm not worried about Bobby Portis's option. I'm sorry, Ty. I'm not even worried about Bryn Forbes' option.
Because I would still like to keep Bryn, but
I would like to keep Bryn, but if Bryn goes, I'm not like, that's it.
I would understand.
They've fallen apart. Their chances are gone with Bryn Forbes because their chances weren't never really there with Bryn Forbes to begin with, it seems.
Well, on that note, thanks for listening to this episode of the Eurostep Podcast Network. This was a Eurostep Win in Six collab. Make sure to subscribe to both podcasts. Oh, it's super easy. It's one button, both located on the same feed. All the great uplifting content that the three of us plus my co-host Rohan Kadi will be creating throughout the rest of this lengthy Bucks playoff run and, of course, into the offseason. Hopefully we don't have too many more half post-game pod, half coaching carousel updates, but you never know. Whatever's
It'll
going on.
It'll just be all coaching carousels.
Yeah.
Whatever's going on with the Bucks, we are going to keep covering it. We are going to be going through it with all of you. So make sure to rate, subscribe, review, unsubscribe, unrate, unreview, and then do it all again. Help us cook the books. Really appreciate the support. You can follow us on Twitter at Ty Windisch, at Adam McGee 11, and at Jordan Tresky, and at Eurostep Podcast, at Win in Six, the numeral podcast. Thank you so much for all the support. We do appreciate it. There's been a lot of very nice tweets and reviews and posts in the Discord since we've been doing this podcast network together. So even if, you know, the Bucks aren't giving us reasons to feel good, at least the listeners are. We do appreciate that. Thank you for listening, and we will be back next time. I would say go Bucks, but don't really have it in me tonight.
They're going somewhere.
'Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.